Okay, we're starting on the top of Nun Hey Aleph. We just came off the Mishnah that described the Zimche Shal Mitzibur, which are the only Shlamim that are brought with Zibur, which are the Shlamim of Shavuot, that come with the Shtei Alechem, and the Ashamot, which are all Ashamot Yachid. There is no such thing as an Asham Tzibur. That's part of why the Ashamot were left to be the last of the Kodshei Kodeshim that we're going to discuss. And so they're brought together here because of the similarity of their dinim, but they close out the section of the Kodshei Kodashim in the Mishnayot, Vezu Mikoman. So now the Gemara asks, Menolan Debayit Tzafon. How do we know you need to do it or process it in the Tzafon, which is one of the hallmarks of Kodshei Kodashim? The question is not with regards to an Asham. We already discussed that earlier, because by the Asham it already tells you you do it in the place of the Olah, in the place of the Chatat. That information we have already, we've already discussed why compared to an Olah and a Chatat. The fact that it's in the Tzafon is not relevant with regards to Hashem because that's explicit in the Psukim. The search that we're making is for the Zimche Shal Mitzibur. How do we know that they have to be done in the Tzafon? How do we know that they are classified as Kodshei Kodeshim? The Tani, Rabba Bar Rav Chanon, Kamei D'Roba, Vasitem Zir Zimechad Lechatat. So here it brings the Psukim from Parshat Emor that describe the Kibsei Atzeret, which are the Shlamim. And over there it says, along with the Shtei Alechem that are brought in Shavuot, the following is also brought. Ikravtem al Alechem. And then it has a number of Olot that are brought. And then, Vasitem, Sirizim Echad Bechatat. You bring a Sirizim Lechatat, which is familiar to us from the Musafim that are brought by many of the holidays. But over here it's associated with the Kvasim. Ushnei Kvasim B'nei Shana L'Zevach Shlamim. So the front of the Pasuk is about the Sir Zim Echad HaChatat. The back half of the Pasuk is about the Shnei Kvasim that are Zevach HaShlamim. So there you have a Hekesh, a correlation between the Chatat in the beginning of the Pasuk and the Kvasim, the Zivchei Shal Mitzibur that are in the latter half of the Pasuk. And so he says, Machatat Bitzafon, just like the Chatat is brought in the Tzafon, Av Shal Mitzibur Bitzafon. So too the Shal Mitzibur we brought in the Tzafon. The Baal Tosafot already asks, why can't we then extend it and say the Matnot Dam of the Zivchei Shal Mitzibur should be like the Chatat? And there are other dinim of Chatat that you can extend over here. The Baal Tosafot say that we have a miut of Otah that we learned earlier. Otah damalamala veinacheret damalamala. That by the Chatat there's a miut of Otah that tells you that only the Chatat has damim on the upper half of the mizbeach. Nothing else does. And so even if you would have a hekesh to Chatat, that still wouldn't give you the ability to put the matanot. It would still not, wouldn't tell you to put the matanot in the place of the chatat. So Amar Rabba, v'chi chatat me'echan lamda. How do you know that by a chatat you have to do it on the north side? Me'ola. That's what we spent time on before. The whole source for the chatat is because it's done b'mkom ha'ola. It's done in the same place that the ola is done. The source for chatat being in the north is ola. Davar lamed be'kesh, hozer malamed be'kesh. That's a hekesh lehekesh, which we know that everybody agrees that hekesh lehekesh does not work in the world of kodoshim. So if chatat is learned from ola behekesh, and now you're learning shal mitzibur from the chatat, that's a double hekesh. That's not going to work over here. Ella meditani rav mari breid rav kana alalotechem ve'al zibchei shamechem. What we read in last week's parsha with regards to the chatzotzrot. The chatzotzrot are blown on the following items, including olotechem and zibchei shamechem. That's when the chatzotzrot, the clay shear of the mikdash, are utilized. Now, as Rashi notes over here, you don't know from the pasuk that we're speaking about the shlamim of Shavuot. All it says is olotechem and zibchei shamechem. Rashi points out that the necessity for clay shear and the chutzotzot being blown is only true by korbanot hatzibur. Rashi says, shein korban yachid to'un klei shir. Shein omrim shir al korban yachid. And so, the zibchei shalmechem have to be speaking about the shlamim of Shavuot, because there are no other shlamim that are brought to tzibur, and you don't say it over the shlamim of a yachid. That leaves us with a lone purpose of mentioning zibchei shalmechem over there as a reference to the Shalmei Tzibur that are brought on Shavuot. So Ma Ola Kodshei Kodoshim, just like an Ola is classified as Kodshei Kodoshim, Af Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur Kodshei Kodoshim. So too, we're going to look at the Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur as Kodshei Kodoshim. And the Nafkamina of them being Kodshei Kodoshim, Rashi over here says, Nifsalim Etvoyom Ubiyotzei, If you remember back on Nin Gimel Medbet, Rashi brought four things that make it uniquely Kodshe Kodashim, Mi'ilah, Yotzei, Mechusar Kippurim, and Tvul Yom. The Tosafot rejected the Tvul Yom and Mechusar Kippurim, and said the only ones that were relevant were Mi'ilah and Yotzei, because Tvul Yom and Mechusar Kippurim are as problematic for Kodshim Kalim as they are for Kodshe Kodashim. Ma'ula B'tzafon, just like the Ula is done in the north, which is correlated with the two, the fact that it's Kodshe Kodashim also brings it into the north. Az Zibchei Shami Tzibur B'tzafon. So too, when it comes to the Zibchei Shami Tzibur, we'll also put them in the north. And here's the source for the fact that the Zibchei Shami Tzibur are processed in the north. Shchita, Kabbalat Adam, all has to be done over there. By Tosafot, actually wonder about how there's an ikuv here. Because if you remember, the source for the fact that there is an ikuv by Ola is from the fact that there is by Chatat. The Ola is the original source for the fact that you have to do the processing in the north, because that says, Shachat Otol Yerchal Mizbeach Tzafona. That's the source for Tzafon. Then we take that through the Hekesh to Chatat. Then by Chatat we have multiple psukim that tell us that it's the Akev. Then we said, how do you know by Ola it's the Akev? That's because of a logical argument which says, how could it be that the derivative is more chamor than the source? Chatat is the derivative, there it's l'akev. How could it be that the Ola, which is the source, is not l'akev? Now you want to take that and utilize it to explain to us that by Zibchei Shami Tzibur, there's an ikuv. Because we're comparing Zibchei Shami Tzibur to the Ola. And that is Davar Alameid v'Kavachomer, Choser Melameid v'Hekesh. That's what you have here. There's a Kavachomer from Chatat to Ola, and now you have a Hekesh between Ola and Zibchei Shami Tzibur. And on Daf Nun, when we discussed this, we noted that that's only according to Rav Papa. You need to hold of Rav Papa in order for that to be true. If you don't hold like Rav Papa, it'd be much more difficult. But just about leave it as somewhat of a question. The Shita Mekubetzet over here brings the fact that there is another source over there at the end of that Gemara. After we say that it's a Kal V'Chomer, the Gemara then says that there is a Deya that it comes from Ha'ola. Ha'ola Ve'akev. And that's the source for the ikuv. If that's the case, then you can obviously learn it through a hekesh, because the source for the ikuv is in Ola itself, and then you won't have a problem. So that's how the Shita Mekubetzet deals with it. Ella, the Gemara says, hekesh shekama l'mayato. But now that you have the hekesh between the Zibchei Shami Tzibur and the Ola, to teach you about Tzafon, to teach you about Kodshei Kodashim, what was the purpose of the hekesh between the Chatat and the Zibchei Shami Tzibur that's mentioned in Parshat Emor? Ki Chatat. It comes to tell you, it's like a Chatat. Machatat ina nechelet ela zichrei kuna, af zibchei shami tzibur lezichrei kuna. Just like the chatat is kodesh kodeshim, and therefore anything that's permitted to be eaten from the chatat is eaten by the kohanim, so too by the zibchei shami tzibur, it'll only be permitted to the zichrei kuna, obviously also in the azara, all the trappings of kodesh kodeshim. That you can't learn from Ola, because there's nothing eaten from the Ola. So the hekesh the chatat tells you about the limitations with regards to the consumption of the Zibchei Shami Tzibur. What are you going to do about the El Nazir, which says, V'kriveh korbano l'Hashem, keves ben shnato tamim, echad le'ola, kibsa achat bat shnata tmima lechatat, v'ayel echad tamim lishlamim. Over there you have three korbanot that are the korbanot of the Tarat HaNazir. There's an Ola, a Chatat, and a Shlamim. So now, Hachanami Neima, the Hekish HaGatuv LeChatat. So let's say there's a Hekish in that Pasuk, because Chatat's mentioned there. Obviously, for Ola, it doesn't matter, but the Shlamim that is mentioned in the Pasuk wouldn't make a difference. That means Shlamim, you would then have the trappings of a Chatat. We know that Shlamim are Kodshim Kalim, not Kodshim Kodashim. So Ma Chatat, Inu Nechala LeZichrei Kuna, Af El Nazir Nami, Inu Nechala LeZichrei Kuna. You want to also say there that the El Nazir, which is a subset of a Shlamim, that Shlamim will also have the same rules and regulations as a Chatat? Like over here, where you're doing the Zibchei Shami Tzibur, you're going to say the same thing by the El Nazir? Ke'ashtu, the Gemara says, how can you compare the cases? Over there by the El Nazir, where it says the Kohen gets as a portion from the Shlamim of the Nazir, the El Nazir, he gets ro'ab b'sheila, nichlau, the kule, balim achlile. The fact that it specifies that a portion of it goes to the Kohen, that means that the residual or the remainder is going to the balim. Otherwise, why does it have to tell you that the Kohen gets this piece? If he's getting everything, why does he have to get that piece? That piece means exclusively that piece, besides the other matnot kuna that come off of it. That's a unique piece that's added on by the El Nazir that the Goyen gets, which is the Zerah B'Sheva. That's quotes Me'achazeh B'Shok that comes from every Shlamim. The fact that it specifies that goes to the Kohen, then you know, of course, the residual goes to the Balim. Zerah B'Sheva B'Aloh L'Tachel L'Zichei Kuna. Where it says, okay, Enochanami, good point that you're making. But then the Zerah B'Sheva should be uniquely eaten by the Zichrei Kuna. It should not be deemed to be Kochim Kalim, whereby we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnah, the families of the Kohanim can't participate in the consumption of the Kochei Kalim. So if you're telling me now that the Zerah B'Sheva has a Hekesh to Khatat, maybe we should limit the Zerah B'Sheva to be eaten only by Zichrei Kuna. Where it says, Kasho, that is a good question. That's a problem here, because the Hekesh would have indicated or would have made us think and should be that the Zichrei Kuna are the only ones that can eat the Zerah B'Sheva. So that's why it's called a Kasha, not a Tiyufta, which is an absolute refutation because there's no answer to the problem. Whereas Kasha is a difficulty that can be answered in a difficult manner, but it does not preclude the ability to solve the problem. And that obviously is laid out here because we have an Eat Baitema. We have an alternate way of dealing with it, which is Kodshei Ikre, Kodshei Kodeshim, Lo Ikre. By the Zerah B'Sheva, it calls it Kodesh. So the Kodesh comes to tell you, Kodesh, and not Kodshei Kodeshim. It's a miut to say that it does not have the trappings. It's not considered like Kodshei Kodeshim. Now, the Rashi points out that that does raise a difficulty because you have the same problem by the Zivkei Shalmei Tzibur, where they're also called Kodesh. So if they're called Kodesh, then how can you say that Kodesh means exclusively Kodesh and not Kodshei Kodeshim? The subsequent pasuk in Emor says, Benit Fokoyin Otam, Alechem Abikurim, Tnufa Lifnei Hashem, Ashnek Vasim, Kodesh Iyul Hashem LaKohen. The word Kodesh also appears there. So if you're telling me the word Kodesh appearing by the Zerah B'Sheva tells you Kodesh and not Kodesh Kodeshim, then you should say the same thing by the Kivsei Atzeret. The Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur should also have the word Kodesh and not be Kodesh Kodeshim. Rashi over here explains that over there it says Kodesh Iyul Hashem. Lashem is the equivalent of saying Kodesh Kodeshim. And so the addition of Lashem over there makes it that they are considered Kodshei Kodeshim despite the word Kodesh appearing. The Baalei Tosafot then say, oh, well, it's already Kodshei Kodeshim because it's Kodesh Lashem. Why do I need all these Hekeshot? I could just say Kodesh Lashem, it's Kodshei Kodeshim, and has the din of Kodshei Kodeshim. So Baalei Tosafot say, no, you need something to precipitate your thinking in that manner, which is, by the Zerah B'Sheva, we're thinking because of the Chatat that it should be Kodshei Kodeshim. Along comes the word Kodesh, says, don't think that way. Over here, by the Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur, by the Kivsei Atzeret, we're thinking Chatat means Kodshei Kodeshim. The word Kodesh might have told you otherwise. Lashem says, mitigates that and says, don't think that way. But not that Kodesh Lashem inherently would have made Kodesh Kodeshim, just means now that Lashem mitigates the possibility of Kodesh being an exclusion. And so that's, you can't learn from it, you can only say that it's not an exclusion. That's a ration about the Tosfot deal with the Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur being still considered Kodshei Kodeshim. Now Gemara says, Elamai Hokuta Itkash. Now you've now eliminated any reason for the Hekesh between the Shlamim, the Olah, and the Chatat by the conclusion of the Nazir's Nizirut. Amarava, so this is an important halacha, Shim Gilach Alachad Mishloshtan Yatsa. If he does his shearing or cutting of his hair on any one of these korbanot, then he has completed his nizirut. As Rashi points out over here, and it's obvious from the psukim, that the cutting of one's hair is associated with the el nazir or with the shlamim, because the Torah requires that you take the hair that is cut from the nazir and you put it on the flame that is cooking the shlamim. So there's a requirement to utilize the hair that is cut towards the cooking of the shlamim. So there's a close association between the two. As well as the fact that the pasuk says, "Vigalacha Nazir petachol moed b'shlamim akadum b'daber," Rashi says, because giluchosh Nazir will be by something that is said about it or is defined by shkitat petachol moed, and that is the shlamim. And therefore, the chatchila, you should cut your hair over the shlamim. But b'diavad, if he cut his hair over any one of these other korbanot, meaning if he brings any one of these three korbanot, then cuts his hair, that's not an abrogation of his nizirut. That is the completion of his nizirut. But rather, we see this as the completion of the nizirut, and it can be associated with any one of the three korbanot, and that's the purpose of the hekesh. Right now, we move on to the Mishnah. This is the beginning of the world of Kodshei Kalim, And it is actually a transition Mishnah, because the items that are noted in this Mishnah have properties like Kodshei Kaleim, and also have properties like Kodshei Kodashim, and that's why it's found as the bridge between the Kodshei Kodashim and the Kodshim Kaleim, which is that Todah, the El Nazir, which we just saw, and the Todah, they learned from a similar Pasuk, that's why they're joined together here, and they have the same din, Kodshim Kaleim. They are classified as Kodshim Kaleim. Rashi says the Nafkamina is for Mi'ilah. Kodshim Kaleim don't have Mi'ilah associated with them, because they are not Kodshei Hashem, they are not Kodshei Kodoshim. Kodshei Kodoshim have Mi'ilah associated with them until they are processed on the Mizbeach. After processing on the Mizbeach, whatever remains for the Mizbeach remains Kodesh and has subject to Mi'ilah. Anything that belongs to the Kohanim or to the Baalim is not subject to Mi'ilah. By Kodshim Kaleim, it's never classified as Mi'ilah, except for the items post the processing of the Korban that are going to go on the Mizbeach. So the Emurim, by the Kodshim Kaleim, turn into something that will have Mi'ilah associated with it post the Korban. So they gain a status of Kodshei Kodashim with regards to that one item. But Kodshim Kaleim in general do not have Mi'ilah associated with them. And that's what Rashi says is the Nafkamina being Kodshim Kaleim. Shechitatan b'chol makom bazara. As opposed to Kodshei Kodashim, which have to be done in the north, Kodshei Kaleim can be done anywhere in the Azara. The Gemara will discuss how you know that, or where in the Azara is that permitted. V'damon to'on shtei matanot j'enarba, similar to the Ola, similar to the Zivchei Sha'am Yitzibor and the Ashamot, their matanot dam on the Mizbeach are shtayim she'enarba, because it says saviv, with regards to the matanot dam of the Shlamim, and with regards to these items. Nechalim b'chol ha'ir, they can be eaten in the entire Yerushalayim, as opposed to Kodshei Kodashim, which are only in the Azara. B'chol adam, to any person, as opposed to Kodshei Kodashim, which can only be eaten by Zichrei Kuna, Me'el Kohanim. B'chol ma'achal, you can eat it any which way you please. That's similar to the Kodshei Kodashim. The reason that's here is because the last Mishnah in Ezum Mekoman says by the Korban HaPesach, Ve'enu Nechal El Atzli, that can only be eaten roasted. So all the other Mishnayot say B'chol ma'achal, as opposed to Tzli. V'yom V'layla Ad Chatzot. Because it says by the Todah, V'yom Korbano Ye'achel, Lo Yaniach Mimenu Ad Boker. So on that day, then you can't leave it over to the next day, so that is Yom Belayla. And it says there, Todat Shlamav, Lerabot Shamei Nazir. To tell you that not only is this true by the Todah, it's also true by the Shlamim of the Nazir. And then we have other Ribuim there that come to include the Chataot, the Hashemot. That's how we know that all Kodashim, with the exception of the Shlamim or the Kodashim Kaleim, have a requirement to be consumed within Yom Belayla. This is the important aspect that makes these uniquely the bridge between Kodshei Kodashim and Kodshim Kaleim, which is that they are only eaten for one day and one night. That is a property of Kodshei Kodashim. Kodshei Kodashim, on the day that you process, you shech them, you eat them that day, and the subsequent night. That is true here as well by the Todah and the El Nazir. They're only eaten for one day and the subsequent night. That is as opposed to Kodshim Kaleim, like the Shlamim, where they're eaten L'Shnei Yamim, Belayla Echad. They're eating for the day you process it, the night afterwards, and the subsequent day, you can eat the Kodshim Kaleim. Now, Todah and El Nazir are a subset of Shlamim. So you would have expected that they would be eaten for 2 days and one night. The Torah specifies by the Todah that it's only eaten on that day and the subsequent night, because it's notar by the following morning. So Ad Chatzot, we've seen before, that's a Harchikat Adam in Avera. Eating notar is a Chiyuv Karet, so we want the Kohanim to stop with a buffer before Alot HaShachar. Hamuram Mehem, things that are taken off of them. Muram Mehem is like Hanafa and Harama, which are the way that you take items from a Korban and give them to a Kohen. So the Harama are the Matnot Kuna that come off of the Korban. Then Kiyotzebet, they have the same din as the Korban itself, which is that they're eaten any which way you like. They can be eaten in the entire city of Yerushalayim. Ela shamuram nechal kohanim nishem nivnem u'avdehem. But the unique aspect of it is it's eaten by the kohanim and their families, their wives, their children, and their avadim. All of them are permitted to partake of these items. That's because these matnot in Parshat Korach are compared to chuma. And just like chuma could be eaten by anyone in the kohen's family, so too kodshim kaleim, the gifts that are given to the kohen from the kodshim kaleim, they also can be eaten by the Kohen and his entire family. Your question is a good question. Just have to reword it. Question is, why are Bnei Hem mentioned here? if by definition, b'neihem are kohanim? So the answer is either that they're ketanim, and therefore they don't qualify yet, so then they eat based on their parent, not because of themselves, or it's just a way to include the whole family. It's just mentioning the family unit or structure, not to say that b'neihem can of their own volition be entitled to the gifts of the kehuna. So it's eaten by their families, because it's compared to truma, but it has the same trappings as the remainder of the shlemim, which means that it can be eaten b'chol ha'ir, and then it's also by the same time frame as whatever the korban is. In this instance, that means yom v'layla. Tan Rabbanan, et chazeh ha'tnufa v'et shoka truma tuchlu b'mkom tahor. So this is a quote from the pasuk by the yom ha'shmini, from the consecration of the Mishkan. And over there it tells us where you're allowed to eat the matnot kuhuna that are associated with the el hamiluim, and with the mincha that comes before. The mincha is then presented beforehand. It says about the mincha, v'chaltem ota b'makom kadosh. You can eat it in a sanctified place, which we will assume is the azara, kichokcha v'chok panecha yimishe Hashem kichein suveti. Because that's the portion that you get from the mincha. This is part of the matnot kuhuna, not only today, but for the remainder of the dorot, that you get the mincha. So the kohen who eats the mincha, kodshei kodeshim, it's eaten b'makom kadosh, and that is the azara. The subsequent pasuk, which speaks about the shlamim that are brought, it says v'chazeh tnufa, et shoka truma, so those are two parts of the matnot that were given to the kohen, tochlo b'makom tahor. You must eat it in a place that is tahor. Rashi thinks that the limud here is makom tahor, as opposed to makom kadosh. The contrast between them tells you that there's something different about the makom tahor than the makom kadosh. If it wanted to tell you the same place, it would have said makom kadosh. The fact that it didn't shows you there must be a difference over here. Hu ata uvanecha uvnotecha itach. There it's you, your children, and your daughters. Kichokcha v'chok panecha nitnu mizivchei shalmei b'nei Yisrael. Because these are the portions that come from the shlamim that the kohen will always get as a gift from the shlamim, which is the chazeh and shok that come off of the shlamim. So those items are eaten by the kohen b'makom tahor. So that makom tahor is really what we're after. Again, Rashi thinks it's the contrast to makom kadosh. Others just say inherently, what does it mean, makom tahor? The implications of makom tahor mean that it's a place that is tahor, but not completely tahor. Because it doesn't make sense that it's a makom tamei, because you're not allowed to be mitamei the kodoshim, as well as the fact that you yourself can't be tamei, because then you couldn't consume the kodoshim. So then, what does that mean, tahor? Tahor must mean you're in a place that is tahor. You are a person who is tahor, but there are tameim that are there. You are in distinction to other people that have a different status that are there, which means you can't be in a place where everybody must be tahor. So makom tahor implies that someone else who are tameim over there, you are obviously tahor, but there are people that are tmeim. So that's giving the indication of location. Did the mincha and the other items that were there, they ate bitum'ah, now that you're telling them eat it tahor now? Ela tahor michlau shehu tameh. Tahor means that there must be people that are found there that are tmeim. You happen to be tahor, but there are other people who are tmeim that are there. Tahor mitumat mitzora. It's tahor where there are no mitzorim found there. Utameh mitumat zav. On the other hand, it is still tamei tumat zav. What the Gemara is doing here is explaining locations and the tumah that affect those locations. We've done this before, but just a quick review. When it comes to a mitzorah, he is sent out of the shalosh machanot. He's sent out completely of the machanot of Israel. That means machane shechina, machane leviyah, machane Israel. He's sent michutz the machane. In Eretz Israel, the equivalent of a machane Israel is a walled city. And therefore, Yerushalayim is deemed to be Machane Yisrael. That means the Mitzorah must be outside of a walled city in Eretz Yisrael, including Yerushalayim. So the Mitzorah is pushed the furthest out of the Machane. He's the third Machane. He's pushed out of Machane Yisrael. Then you have Tumat HaZav. Tumat HaZav is allowed to be in Yerushalayim, is allowed to be in Machane Yisrael. He is precluded from being in Machane Leviyah and Machane Shechinah, because he has Tumah Yotzei Migufo. True of anybody who has Tumah Yotzei Migufo. In the time of the Mikdash, Machane Leviyah is Har HaBayit, and all the parts of the Mikdash, until you enter into Shar Nicanor, into the Azara. Machane Shechinah is Shar Nicanor and the whole Azara area. So as far as a Zav is concerned, he can go into Yerushalayim, he can't enter Har HaBayit, he can't enter the Mikdash. The next level of Tumah is Tumat HaMeit. Tumat Meit is allowed both in Machane Yisrael as well as in Machane Leviyah, but not allowed in Machane Shechina. The reason that we know that is because it says, Veikach Moshe, that's Yosef Imo. Moshe carries the bones of Yosef along with him. And Moshe's living in Machane Leviyah. It shows you that Tumat Meit, not even Tumat Meit, a Meit that's Mo is allowed to be in Machane Leviyah. So those are the gradations of Tumat. So now what the Gemara says is, Makom Tahor means that it's Tahor from Tumat Mitzorah, which means Mitzorah is sent out of there. There are no Mitzoraim where you are now, because it's cleansed of Mitzoraim, because they have to be Mechutz to Machane Yisrael. But there are other Tmeim running around, who are the Tumat Azav, who are allowed in Machane Yisrael. So it's called a Makom Tahor, because it is somewhat Tahor, but not completely Tahor. What's that location? Zeh Machane Yisrael, which has the ability to have Zavim there, but exclude or send out the Mitzoraim. Ve'ema tohor mitumat zav tamei tumat tamei. Just the introduction that we gave before, you understand now that it could be a makom tohor, it could be defined as machane leviyah. In machane leviyah, you're allowed to have tumat tamei, but you're not allowed to have tumat zav, or tumat semi gufo is precluded from being there. So why don't we say that's called a makom tohor? First of all, it's in contrast to makom kadosh, which is the machane shechina, as well as the fact that makom tohor indicates that there are tzmeim there, and machane leviyah, there are tzmeim there, there's tamei meit that can be present there. So when I say, bezuzeh, what's that? Zeh machane leviyah, or in the zman habayit, it means the harabayit, and everything in the mikdash, chutz mi azara, or ezrat Yisrael. So amar habayi, amar kra, the pasuk says, v'chaltem otah b'makom kadosh, that's the previous pasuk, otah b'makom kadosh, v'lo acheret b'makom kadosh. So that already tells you that's not going to be in the Machane Shechina, because you have a meal. Mincha is eaten by Makom Kadosh. Nothing else is eaten in the Makom Kadosh. So that means that the gifts from the Shlamim are not going to be eaten in the Machane Shechina. You already find yourself in the Machane Leviyah from that miut. So Avka the Machane Leviyah. So you've already been pushed out to the Machane Leviyah. Hadar Ktiv. Then the pasuk says, Makom Tahor. So that gives you an additional Afko Machane Yisrael, pushes you out to the Machane Yisrael. Because had it not written Makom Tahor, you would have already been in the Machane Leviyah, because of the miut of Otah. Now that you have an additional miut, which is Makom Tahor, that tells you move one more gradation out to the Machane Yisrael, not the Machane Leviyah. So now you know that you can eat the Shlamim in the Chol Ha'ir, in the entire Machane Yisrael, which is Yerushalayim. Rav Amar, Otah b'makom kadosh, v'lo acheret b'makom kadosh. The mincha is eaten by Makom Kadosh in the Azara and Machane Shechina. Nothing else is. Afka the Gamret. That means that you now push it out completely from anything that is Kadosh. And the gradations of Kedusha. The Mishnayot, the beginning of Kelim, deal with gradations of Kedusha. Eretz Yisrael Mikudash Mikol Aretzot. Ir Mukefet Choma is Mikudash. More than that. Yerushalayim is even more Kadosh. The Harabayit is more Kadosh. The Azarot are more Kadosh. Meaning that there's a gradations of Kedusha that move, and he's saying here that when it says you're out of Makom Kadosh, means anything that's deemed to be Makom Kadosh, you are precluded from. Hadar Kadav Rachmana Tochlo B'Makom Tahor. Then you must eat it B'Makom Tahor. Ayla the Machane Yisrael. That tells you you got to go back into Machane Yisrael. Now you've been pushed out completely, but now it makes a demand for something that's at least partially Tahor. That's only true if you re-enter into Machane Yisrael, or you're found in Yerushalayim, where it says Ve'ema Ayla the Machane Leviyah. Why don't you say it brings him back all the way into Machane Leviyah when it brings him back in? L'chada Ma'ilinen, L'tarte lo Ma'ilinen. If you give a chiddush from the pasuk that we're bringing you back, you do a step at a time. The pasuk's not going to make it wholesale that you move all the way back in. It tells you move into Makom Tahor. We take the least chiddush, that is, and that is to put you one gradation up in terms of Tahara. Iyachi afuke nami. So that's the case. Then what about the logic when you said it says otah, that's a miut to send you out, even out of Machane Yisrael. Why don't you say there, l'chada mafkinan, mitarete lo mafkinan. Why don't we say he only pushed you down one level? Why are you saying that you push this out completely? Behold, in addition to that, lo tuchal echol bish'arecha. The pasuk tells you that you're not allowed to eat these items bish'arecha, tiv, which means you can't push them out of Yerushalayim completely, because then you'd be in violation of what the Torah says. You can't eat it wherever you so choose. There is a limitation to where the shlamim can't be consumed. So there already tells you that you have to be within Machane Yisrael. So I don't need another pasuk, Bimkom Tahor, to tell me you need to be in Machane Yisrael. El mechavarta k'dabaye. Makes more sense the way that Abaye explained it, and we will favor that explanation. I mean, even though Rav is not arguing fundamentally, and Abaye agrees then you end up in the same place. It's the methodology for getting there. And the Gemara says that Abaye's methodology makes more sense, is more sound and logical. Rava's has flaws in it, and therefore will favor Abaye's explanation for why the right to eat Kodshim Kalim or the Todah Ve'el Nazir in the entire Yerushalayim. Now, what's interesting over here are that the three gradations that are laid out here in the Psukim are the following. Machane Shechina, Machane Levia, Machane Yisrael. The equivalent in the time of the Beit Mikdash is the Azara or Ezrat Yisrael, the Harabayit, and then Yerushalayim. So those are the three gradations. But the truth is that any city that is a walled city, Mimot Yeshua Beinun, has a din of Machane Yisrael. That's why a Mitzorah is kicked out of those cities. So in essence, what you could say is that Shlamim should be able to be eaten in any walled city, walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, because that's classified as Machane Yisrael, where you're entitled to eat the Shlamim. Potentially, you should be allowed to eat it in any city. The problem is a pragmatic or practical problem, which is you can't get it from Yerushalayim to there without crossing over an area that is problematic. A problem of Yotzei, and that Yotzei will make it that you can't move it from Yerushalayim to the other city that is walled. Halakhically, you could eat it there. But the problem is you can't exercise your right to eat it over there because you have to take it out of Yerushalayim and it's pasul automatically when you exit Yerushalayim. Now we move on to the core of Kodshim Kalim, which is the quintessential Kodshim Kalim, which is Shlamim Kodshim Kalim. They are Kodshim Kalim. Shechitatan b'chol makom b'azara. Like other Kodshim Kalim, they have shechita anywhere in the azara. V'daman ta'un shtei matanot she'en arba. Similarly, the word Saviv is used by Shlamim, so it has the same matnot dam as all the korbanot that we've been discussing until now, Shnaim Shein Arba. Nechleim B'chol Yair, as we saw in the previous Mishnah, you get to eat an entire city of Yerushalayim, and we learned the makor for that from Shlamim, and that will apply to all forms of Shlamim and Kodshim Kalim. B'chol Adam, to any individual. B'chol Ma'achal, any way you please. Shnei Yamim V'layla Echad. So this is the hallmark of Kodshim Kalim, which is they could be in him for 2 days and one night. The gifts that are given to the Kohanim have the same din as the Korban itself. Once again, it's eaten by the family of the Kohen, as opposed to the remainder of the Korban that can be eaten by anybody. But it has the same limitations as that of the Korban itself. Which means, number one, it can be eaten in B'chol Ha'ir, it can be eaten in the entire city. Number two is, it can be eaten in Shnei Yamim V'Laila Echad. It's the same time frame. All right, now the Gemara wants to know, how do you know the dinim with regards to the location of where you can shech the Kodshim Kalim? One of the distinctions between Kodshei Kodashim and Kodshim Kalim is the location in which you can process it. Kodshei Kodashim in the Tzafon, Kodshim Kalim, or B'chol Makom Bazara. The Gemara wants to know the source for that. They're going to Shlamim to find it. And that is because by the Parshiyah of Shlamim in Perek Gimel, in Vayikra, there are actually three Shlamim that are mentioned. There's the Bakar that is mentioned, and then there's the Tzon that is mentioned, which has two categories. There's the Kesev, and there's the Eiz. In each one of those cases, it tells you where you process the Korban. It says, in the first case, the Samach Yudol Rosh Korbano, Ush Chato Petach O Moed. A lot of the halachot that we know come from here. Saviv tells you Shtayim Shein Arba. Zarku Bnei Aaron HaKohanim. Mei Kabbalah Ve'elech is mitzvat Keuna. V'samach Yado Rosh Karbano. You have to do Smicha. But there it says, Ushchato Petach Omoe. Shchita is done, Petach Omoe. Again, Imin Atzon Korbano. And then the first one is a Kesef. It says there, V'samach Yado Rosh Korbano. V'shachato Tov Lifnei Omoe. So again, Shachat Oto Lifnei O Moed. So Kuban Aaron Agdamo Mizbeach Saviv. That's the second time it tells you where you do the Shechita. First time it says Petach O Moed. Over here it says Lifnei O Moed. And then the third time when it mentions the Im'ez Korbano, once again there it says Samach Yedor Rosho, Shachat Oto Lifnei O Moed. So Kuban Aaron Agdamo Mizbeach Saviv. So twice it says that you do the Shechita Lifnei O Moed. One time it says that you do it Petach O Moed. So that's what Gemara here is going to darshan, that there are actually three psukim here. Tan Rabbanan. Ushechato petach O Moed. Vishachatoto lifnei O Moed. Shechatoto lifnei O Moed. The three psukim that we just quoted, the Gemara is quoting over here. Lachshir et kol aruchot bikodshim kalim. That is to tell you that any direction, anywhere in the Azara will be kosher for kodshim kalim or for shlamim. Kavchomer litzafon. Certainly that's the case for the tzafon. It's a question if this is needed at all, because he just said to you, you can do it anywhere you want in the Azara. So what do you mean, Kavachomer the Tzafon? Tzafon is one of the directions that are in the Azara. Nevertheless, in contrast to the logic of Rabbi Eliezer, the Tanakam is stating that he thinks the logic is just the opposite. Or, because of Rabbi Eliezer, he makes the statement here to say there might be a Havamina to say the north is no good, even if you're mad to the other Rukhot. And that's why he comes out to say it's a Kavachomer that the north should be included. Uma Kodshei Kodashim, Shloch Shiru B'chol Rukhot. Kodshei Kodashim, but you can't do it anywhere you want. Huk Shiru B'tzafon. There, the Tzafon was allowed to be used. Kodshim Kalim, Shuk Shiru B'chol Rukhot. Din Shuk Shiru B'tzafon. Kodshim Kalim, you can do it in any of the locations or directions you want. And certainly the Tzafon should be permitted for the Kodshim Kalim. But there's a mayor, that's not necessarily true. Lo Nemar Katuv, Elakshir Tzafon. The purpose of the post is to tell you you're allowed to do Shkita on the Tzafon. Shiachol, you would have made the following logical argument. It is not necessarily as compelling a logic as you would want, but this is what Rabbi Lezer says. Hello, Dinu. Isn't it, can't say here a Kal Vachomer, but rather a derivative of what we say. Ma kodshim kalim shukshuru b'chol aruchot lo shur mukumam etzu kodshei kodashim. By the kodshim kalim, which are permitted to be shechted anywhere in the Azara, yet that has no bearing on the kodshei kodashim. The kodshei kodashim cannot be done b'chol makom. So too, kodshei kodashim shukshuru ela b'tzafon, kodshei kodashim, where they're only permitted in the tzafon, enu din shlok shur mukumam etzu kodshim kalim, certainly their space should not be used for kodshim kalim. A very difficult logic, but its basic idea is, if by kodshim kalim we have areas that are uniquely associated with kodshim kalim and not with kodshei kodashim, the same should be true in reverse. The kodshei kodashim have a unique location, which is tzafon, that should preclude the kodshim kalim from being processed in that area. Meaning that there's separation of kodshei kodashim and kodshim kalim. Kodshei kodashim will all exclusively be in the north, and then kodshim kalim will be exclusively in the south, west, and east, but not in the north. That would have been your Havamina. Tamalomar, that's why we have the psukim that say, Lifnei O Moed. The Gemara wants to know, Bamai Kamiflage. What's the machloka between the Tanakama and Rabbi Eliezer? Seemingly that there's no halachic nafkamina between them. It's a question of their methodology for getting to the same place. Which is Tanakama Savar. Tanakama believes Tlata Krai Ketive. There are three psukim that are written by the Shlamim, which again we've quoted. Chad Legufe. One of them is essential to teach you the din itself, dinibai petach ol moed, that you have a requirement of doing this at the petach, meaning that when the doors are open. Rashi says over here that even though we use the terminology door to refer to a doorway, that is incorrect. A petach is uniquely associated with something that is patuach, something that is open. And so what we learn from here is not only that you have to do it in front of the petach omoy, but actually the petach, the door, must be open. And that's what Rashi describes over here. Ancient petach, kagon kodem shif techua doltot. Before you open up the doors, there is no doorway there. Because of the fact that petach means patuach, open up. So again, as opposed to how we speak in the colloquial, but we say the door is over there, that's whether the door is open or closed, and it's referencing the doorway, not the door itself. Over here, what Rashi points out is petach, the door when it's a jor, that is considered to be a petach. It's an opening. That's what it means. You must be able to access and have an opening. Not that you have a doorway or a door frame, but you have something that has a door that is now open. And so that's the din, actually, that we learn here by Shlamim, that until the doors of the Ol Moed, or the doors of the Echal are open, one is not permitted to shech a Shlamim. The Shinim Yekubetzer over here, you know, Gimel asks, why do you need this to be the psul? Isn't there a restriction against bringing the any korban before the Tamid Shel Shachar? So that should be the disqualification over here. Forget about the opening of the door or the assembly of the Mishkan. The disqualification should be that you're doing it too early before the Tamid Shel Shachar, because they open up the doors when they did the Tamid Shel Shachar. So the Bali does what say, even though there is a psul of bringing the korban before the Tamid Shel Shachar, that is Hainu the Mitzvah. That's the Chatchila. Aval pasul leka, but b'diavad it still would be a kosher korban. That's why if the door is closed, that disqualifies it completely, something that doing it before the Tamid Shel Shachar would not do. So that teaches you, at least by Shlamim, that there's a requirement for petach ol moed. Whether that can be extended or extrapolated to other korbanot is a machloket rishonim. Madaf samach aleph amud aleph, where Rashi thinks it's uniquely associated with the Shlamim, Whereas the Belly of Tosafot quote that they think it has application to all korbanot. V'chadlach shir tzadim. Other pasuk is coming to tell you that tzadim, areas that are around the Azara, are permitted to be used. That's what Rashi says over here. Kedol lachshir tzadim, korocha v'azara. The entirety of the Azara. Everything lo tema kedeged petach dafka. Not to say that directly opposite the door is kasher. That's why it said lifnei velokte petach. One pasuk said petach omoed, the other two said lifnei omoed. Lifnei omoed means you don't have to be directly in front of the petach. V'chad, the psol tzidei tzadim. Next petach omoed has come to teach you that tzidei tzadim are not qualified. Rashi says tzidei tzadim means in the lishkot, in the chambers that are found around the Azara. Those chambers, even if they are Kodesh, mean that the doorways open to the Kodesh, which means they themselves have Kedushat Azara, despite having Kedushat Azara, you can't shecht in there. They are not called Petach Omoed. Tosfot says that the Lishkot are obvious that they are not Lifnei Omoed. Therefore, that can't be the definition of the Tzidei Tzadim over here. Rather, it thinks that the Tzidei Tzadim are the areas that are not in front of the doorway, things that are behind the doorway, which later on the Gemara will try to be machshir through creation of other doorways. That's what we're speaking about when we say tzidei tzadim are psulim. Now Rashi might not have liked that explanation of the Baal Tosafot, because then what's the havamina that should be included when they're behind the doorway? If you have the lishkot, there's at least a havamina to say that they are lifnei omoed, even if they are separated by a wall. But the things that are behind the doorway, meaning they're blocked by the physical structure of the heichal and the ulam itself, then, what's the havamina to say that it should be kshirim, that you need a pasuk to exclude it? The tzafon lo yitzrich kra. Because you don't need a pasuk to tell you that the tzafon is kasher, that means that the other pasuk is coming to tell you that tzadim, areas that are around the Azara, are permitted to be used. So again here, if you only had one pasuk, we would have thought that lashon petach means that it has to be patuach. It means that the doorway would have to be open. But then Rashi claims I would have had a havamina that the only place that is mutar to shecht the kodshim kalim is directly opposite the door to the heichal. The handouts that I sent out, you can see that the dark strip there would be uniquely the place that you're allowed to put it in. Well, we have another lifnei omoed. One of them teaches you that these areas are all kshirim litzadim. Those areas that are to the tzad, not directly opposite, are kshirim. Now, as far as the northern side, I don't need that, because the northern side is already good for Kodshim, it's certainly good for Kodshim Kalim. So for the southern side, that is not directly opposite the door, that's what I need the Pasuk of Lifnei Omoed for. The last Lifnei Omoed comes to teach you that that's the area that is Kasher, but Sidei Tzadim, which Rashi claims are the Lishkot that are found here that open to this area, are not classified as being Lifnei Omoed. Tosafot says, no, it refers to the areas here, around the sides and the back of the Heichal, where that's not called the Tzadim, and that's what it comes to exclude. That's the view of the Tanakhama. Now the Gemara says, the view of Rabbi Eliezer is the following. Rabbi Eliezer savar chad legufei, similar to what we said by the Tanakhama, the Dibai Petach Omoed, that teaches you that you need the Petach Omoed, you need to be Petach Patuah, v'chadach shir tzafon. One of the Tzukim is going to tell you that the north is okay to be used. So one comes to say that the north is okay. The other one comes to say that the south is okay. Ah, what about the exclusion of Tzidei Tzadim? Tzidei Tzadim, lo yitzrich kra. He says, Tzidei Tzadim, there's no havamina that you should think they're okay. Either because of Rashi, who thinks Tzidei Tzadim are lishkot, which is that there's a wall separating between you and the Petach Omoed, or for the Baalei Tosafot who think that it means, Tzidei Tzadim means you're behind the Petach, then for sure you're not going to be kosher. They don't need that because it's obvious that they're not lifnei omoed. You won't even have a havamina to say they should be included because they don't qualify as petach omoed. They don't qualify as lifnei omoed. So there's no reason to think you need a pasuk to exclude them. So in the end, even though their methodologies are different, seemingly they come to the same conclusion as to what is halachically permitted and classified as being lifnei omoed and petach omoed. Maishnocha dichtiv petach omoed. Why does the pasuk in one place say petach omoed and the other one say lifnei omoed? K'mashmuan k'Rav Yehuda Mashmua. That brings us to the conclusion of the memra of Rav Yehuda Mashmua, the Amar Rav Yehuda Mashmua. Shlamim sheshachtam kodem sheipatchu daltot eichal psulim. Shlamim that are shechted before the doors of the eichal open up are pasul, and that's what we noted before. petach, as in contrast to lifnei, means petach patuach. It must be a door that's open. It's not enough that you unlock the doors. It's not enough that the doors could be open. It must be the doors are actually open. Shenemar ishpato petach o moed. Bzman shu patuach, lo bzman shu na'ol. The time that it's open and not the time that it's closed. In my name, Amar Marukva Bar Chama Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina. Shlamim shishachtam kodem shipatchu daltot eichal. Shlamim that are shechted before the opening of the doorways of the eichal. Psulim, they're problematic. Shnei ushechato petach o moed. Bzman shu petach eichal patuach. If the door of the eichal is open, then fine. Velo bzman shu na'ol. Not at a time that it's locked. Even if it's unlocked, as long as it's closed, it's problematic. B'marova matni hachi, in Eretz Yisrael, they learned in the following manner. Amrav Yaakov bar Acha, Amrav Ashi, Shlamim shishachtam, kodem shiftechu daltot eichal psulim. Yishach Shlamim, before the doors are open, they are pasul. Ube mishkan, kodem shemidu levim et mishkan. And by the mishkan, before the levim put up or assemble the mishkan, or lachar shifreku levim et mishkan, or after the levim took it down, psulim. That'll be problematic because you're missing petach oel moed. Pshita, where it says, it's clear to us, mugaf kina'udamin. The door is closed, it's equivalent for it to being locked. And so therefore the only option is to open up the doors, not to unlock the doors. Vilon mai. This is a question that you guys had asked about a vilon. What about a curtain that is put there? So Amar Rav Zeira hu atzmo in an asela kapetach patuach. It itself is considered to be a petach patuach, as Rashi says over here, that it's niuta ba'alma obid, that the purpose of putting up a vilon is not to seal off or close off that doorway, it is rather to create privacy or create sniut in that doorway. So what you see from here is that the vilon does not change the fact that the door is considered to be open. That's the way Rashi writes it. The Bali and Tosafot say, shavilon mishamesh she'asul et sniut ba'alma, Shalo yistaklu be'eichal b'shak shechita. So they won't look into the eichal at the time of shechita. This goes back to something Rashi said earlier in the Masechta as to why one may not do shechita in the eichal with lav orach hara. It's not the proper place to do shechita. It's not an area where it'd be considered proper etiquette to do shechita. And so the vilon, the Bali Tufot said, is for the same purpose. It's to create a division between where you could do shechita and the eichal, even though you have to do it lifnei omoed, we still want, even though it's open omoed, it's open to the eichal, we still want the shechita to be done in a manner that's sanua. So we put up a vilon over there. But that vilon is not meant to seal it off or to shut it down. It's simply to prevent visibility. And you can see that more strongly worded in the Shita Mekubetzet Ot Zayin, Chenir Li, Klomar, Ikar vilon Litzorech Pritichat HaPetach Nitkan was there for the purpose of opening up the doors. But the yot sham b'shat shechita litzniut, to be there at the time of shechita in order to provide the tzniut, yishum da'aza petach tzirich the yot patuach, because that's when the doorway has to be open. Dilu la'achar shechita ein atzmicha levilon, because after the shechita you don't need the vilon over there. Tenakfo adolto, because they closed up the doors at that point. They only opened them up to do the shechita, and the vilon's purpose is to facilitate the ability to open up the doors and do shechita. And for that reason, it's not considered to be a hefsek, or it's not considered to have ruined the petach patuach. So Gemara here asks, Gova Mai, what is the story with regards to having a pile of something that is in front of the petach omoed? Does a pile, as opposed to a vilon, negate the fact that you have a petach over there? The vilon, we say, is just for tzniuta, so it doesn't negate the fact that the door is open. On the other hand, if the door is open, but you have a pile of dirt that's sitting in front of it, does that mean you still have an open door with a pile of dirt? Or is the pile of dirt making now you no longer have an open door way over there? Tashma, the Tanya Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yudomer, Shnei Pishpishim Ayu B'Beit HaChalifot. There were these two doorways that were found in the Beit HaChalifot. V'Govhan Shmona, and their height was 8 amot. K'dei Lachshir Et Hazara Kula, V'Achilat Kodshei Kodashim, U'Lishchitat Kodshei Kalim. The purpose of these doorways was not for accessibility, but rather to extend the concept of petach omoed. Because we know that if you're lifnei omoed, or you're in front of the petach omoed, then you have the ability to do shechitat kodshei kalim there, as well as the ability to eat kodshei kodoshim, which must be eaten, lifnei omoed or petach omoed, they also are governed by the same thing. So we have a problem with regards to the structure of the azara, which is that anything that is in front of the ulam or the echal, those areas can be classified as areas where shvita is permitted. Our problem is that once you get behind the area of the heichal, then you no longer have visibility to be a bifnei ohel moed. So now you have a problem which Rashi calls the area of the Beit Chalifot. Rashi says the entire area between the wingspan of the ulam to back to the western side is all classified as Beit Chalifot. And that is, if you picture in your mind, I'm sure all of you have seen models or pictures of this, that the heichal was structured in a way where there was an ulam, a type of antechamber that had wings to it. It was wider than the heichal itself, and that was in the front. And then behind it was the kodesh and the kodesh hakodeshim. That ulam had a wing of 15 amot on the northern side and 15 amot on the southern side. Those wings make it that one has to have visibility, line of sight, to the petach omoed, or being lifnei omoed. So those areas behind the ulam, as you can see in the diagrams that I sent out, would then be precluded. Now the Beit HaKhalifot, as Rashi notes, we know from other places, it refers to the chalaf, the knives. And so Beit HaKhalifot is where the Kohanim stored their knives that they used for shvita. So again, there's no necessity to go into the ulam from that area, but there was utility to that area, which was that they stored the knives in that area. The problem is, if we want you to be able to shech back there, we need a petach to the Ol Moed. So what the Gemara says over here is, the reason there were shnei pishpishim, there were these two small doorways on the back of the ulam by the Beit HaKhalifot, was in order to make the area behind the ulam kosher l'shchitat kodshim kalim and echilat kodshei kodoshim. So again, Rashi calls the whole area from the back of the wingspan of the ulam all the way to the end of the Azara in the west, he calls that Beit HaKhalifot. The Baal Tosfot says Beit HaKhalifot was the wingspan of the ulam, was called the Beit HaKhalifot. So Rashi says, since the Khalifot was stored there, so the access from the Azara to there made it that that area of the Azara was called Beit HaKhalifot. The other hand, the Baal Tosfot says, no, the storage area itself, that part of the ulam was called the Beit HaKhalifot, but the area that's outside of it was called the Azara and not the Beit HaKhalifot. But either way, the opening of those doors there in the back of the ulam, the back of the wingspan of the ulam, allows it then that you also have now another petach ol moed or lifnei ol moed. So Rashi points out over here, this all assumes that the ulam has the same classification as the ol moed. So that we're trying to prove from this quote that we have about being makshir, the area of behind the ulam. And so the Gemara says, my love, when it says there that's govan shmona, that they have a height of eight amot, Deika kamayu shmona. Sounds like there was a pile of something in front of it that was eight amot high, and that would have blocked the doorways. And nevertheless, it says there that you can't shech the kodshim kalim over there, and you can't eat kodshi kodeshim over there because of the pishpishim. So that would answer our question. Even if you have a pile in front of it, it's still okay. It says no. The gabo ninu shmona. But it says no. It means that the height of the doorways was eight amot. Now the Gemara is going to challenge that, and that's why, even though it was a strange explanation to say there was a pile 8 amot high in front of the doorways, the reason that we did that is because of the upcoming question of the Gemara, which was that there was a standard size for doorways in the Mikdash, and this doesn't meet that standard size. Given that, how could it be that it's speaking about the height of the doorway? It must be speaking about something that's in front of it that's blocking it. In the end, the Gemara says, no, it's the height of the doorway. Now, Meitavei, Kol HaShe'arim Shayusham, all the gateways in the Mikdash, Govan Esrim Amah, Brochban Esrim Amah. They were 20 amot high, 10 amot wide. So here you have a doorway, which is 8 amot high. It doesn't qualify based on the standard doorway that was there in the Mikdash. It says, Pishpishim, shiny. These doorways were different. These small access points were different than doorways. Their purpose was not for entry and egress, but rather, the ein mishamshim knisa v'yitziyah elakshure b'shma ba'alma. It's just to give the area a shame of lifnei omoed or petach omoed. You're trying to create a halachic reality of having it be petach omoed or lifnei omoed, and you can only do that by having a doorway. So that's exactly what they did. They put in a doorway. Wasn't it necessarily a doorway of function? It wasn't a doorway matching all the doorways of the Azara. It was a doorway there just to give that area the status of being lifnei omoed. Tosfot over here says, if govha, if there's something that is of height in front of the door, that's a blockage, then tema yikovah chashiv hefsek imkein keneged ha-mizbeach Yibasel shemafsik. Anything in front of the mizbeach should be problematic because the mizbeach is mafsik between you and the doorway. Shinta Megubetzet answers that question of Tosafot by saying in Otchet, V'amar Mori, the Vadai Govosh Mizbeach Enu Mafsik, Kevin the Torah Korbanotu. Because it's for the purpose of the Korbanot, it can't be something that is mafsik. You're shechting a Korban, and that Mizbeach is for the Korbanot, so that's not going to be mafsik between you and the Petach O Moed. Although you could make a more fundamental distinction, which is an item that is mafsik anywhere along the way, nobody classifies that as being a problem. The question of the Gemara is when in the doorway you have something of height, does that then turn into being a door or the equivalent of a door? That's only true if the item is mafsik, is sitting in the doorway or where you would have a door anyway. But if it's far away from there, that's not called a petach na'ol, that's a petach fatuach, where you have to not have visibility to it, but you're in a location that is bifnei omoed, and in a place where the omoed is patuach. But it says, okay, now that you dealt with the back of the wingspan of the ulam, vayikad stodim, what about the sides of the ulam? The northern side of the ulam to the northern wall of the azara, and the southern side of the ulam to the southern wall of the azara, those areas don't have any visibility or line of sight to a doorway. So how are you going to deal with them in terms of the ability to shecht in those areas or the ability to eat kodshei kodashim over there? So the Gemara answers, that they open the doors on the corner. So these pishpishim that were in the ulam for the Beit HaKhalifot, they were in the southwestern and northwestern corner of the ulam, in the wingspan of the ulam. In that way, that entrance has a line of sight, both from behind the wingspan of the ulam, as well as next to the ulam itself. From both of those areas, you would then be able to see this pishpesh, which was at the corner. So that's the way Rashi explains it, that the Keren Zavit is referencing to the doorway, not to the shkita of the animal. You could have explained it, that it's modifying where you shech the animal. You do it on an angle so that you can still have line of sight to the doorway. Rashi's explanation seems more compelling based on the Lashon HaGemara. Now you solve the problems for the entire Azarav, except for Akarei Beit HaKaporet Mai. Behind the Heichal, what is the din? That area has no line of sight to a doorway. So that the Gemara answers, Tashma, Damarami Bar Yehuda Marav, Lul Katan Haya Akarei Beit HaKaporet. It was a small window behind the Kodshei Kodashim, Gvoash Monamot, that was 8 amot high, in order to allow that area to be accessible for shkita of kodshim kalim, as well as the consumption of kodshei kodashim. And so that will then, if you open up a quote-unquote door in the back of the kodesh of kodashim, that will then give you the ability to shech in that area because of the lul katan, that small opening in the back of the kodesh of kodashim, that makes it now that the back of the Heichal also is classified as being Lifnei Olam Moed or Petach Olam Moed. But it says, Ainu Dichtiv, as it says in Divrei Yomim, the Mizrach HaLevim Shisha, the Tzafona Layom Arba'a, the Negba Layom Arba'a, the Sufim Shnaim Shnaim, the Parbar Lamarav Arba'a, the Mesila Shnaim the Parbar. My the Parbar? What's a Parbar? It's as if one is saying opposite the outside, which means that that's an area that is behind or opposite. So that parbar is a reference to that area, and that is a description of where they were guards in the Mikdash, where the Levim stood guard. One of the posts where the Levim stood guard was behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And we know that the Levim that stood guard only stood guard by gateways. And so that means there must be some opening or gateway behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim that makes it that it's considered or classified as Petach Olam Moed, which would then allow you to shecht in that area as well as eat Kodesh HaKodeshim in that area. It seems that the lul must have been something different than the pishpish, and that's where Balei Tosafot tried to discuss how does the lul help you by being back there if it's not really a petach, if it's not really a place that you can enter and exit, which means that the Balei Tosafot think, unlike Rashi, that the pishpishim were actually in use, and that there were actually doorways that were being used, as opposed to the lul that wasn't in use, and that would explain the difference between the name of pishpish versus lul. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot are somewhat perplexed as to why the lul helps when you have the two pishpishim, which are functional, as opposed to Rashi, who thinks they were just there for the halakhic reasons, but the lul, which according to the Baal Tosfot, is not a pishpesh, but rather just a window that allows you to see into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, why should that classify as a petach in order to be matir, the shkita of the Kodeshim Kalim? And Tosfot points out that had the petach of the Heichal been closed with a little hole in it, nobody would say there that that was okay to shech. So why is that opening in the back allow you to do such? For those that want to explain or deal with the issue of the Tosfot by reminding us that the walls surrounding the Kodesh and Kodesh Kodeshim, the walls were so wide and thick that there actually were ta'im. There were actually chambers that were there. And so the lul did not open up into the Kodesh and Kodeshim. The lul opened up into a chamber that was behind the Kodesh and Kodeshim. And that chamber had a door that went into the Kodesh and Kodeshim. That door was left open, and then the window looked into that door. So in that way, it would be classified as if there was a petach or moed that was open. That's how the Chofetz Chaim tries to solve this problem that is raised by the Baalei Tosafot. Based on all those accommodations, by having the doorway of the Beit HaChlifot on the angle of the back of the wingspan of the ulam, as well as Mul Katan behind the Heichal, gives you the ability to classify Tayer Azara as Nei Omoed or Petach Omoed. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines from the bottom of Nun Hei Amud Bet.